Thank
what
you,
are you
Steve?
Waiting for?
Well, you know, I'm not a musician. So I always wonder if you are a musician and you've written a song like these boys, how do you know when to make your song kick in? Like, you want to start slow and then you want a moment where it just kicks in. So if you're writing a song, do you go, do I give it 5 seconds before it kicks in, or 10 seconds, or a minute?
I think you vary it.
Yeah. Mix it up a little.
In that case, you gave it 90 seconds.
Yeah, because in that song, it didn't kick in.
And there was a little kick.
I went and I read a magazine. I came back.
I was proud of you because you let the music establish. A lot of times, you're just right out of the box, roaring to go.
Oh, I'm anxious.
See how she criticizes you there?
I didn't.
Have a backhanded criticism.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Why do you just start it right away, Bertrand?
Just pointing it out. I mean, she said she was pleased that you did it right this time.
I did not
Today
say
was
that.
The day.
You said that.
I let it kick in.
Yeah.
You know? I would write, if I was a writer of the rock and roll songs, I would write a song one day where it never kicked in. I would just, it would just be slow.
You did, and Jake Arrieta's
song. Oh, yeah,
song.
That song didn't kick in.
Still waiting for that kick.
That was a slam.
The best is Young Americans, David Bowie.
I'm trying to think of...
Starts with the drum, boom, boom, comes
Get
right,
it, Kev,
right away.
Young yeah. Americans.
It's the best bump.
Yeah, with the drum beat. And
so it goes from 0 to 60 right out of the box.
It
just shoots
kick,
out
right to the jaw.
Yeah, that's a good thing to do every once in a while. Just make people go, "Oh, you thought you knew the rules of kicking in? Well, I'll show you. There are no rules to kicking in."
What about vehicle? But all right, wait, hang on.
Now there's still some.
No, start it. Listen, you missed the beginning.
Yeah, the drum beats.
Yeah.
Go ahead, restart it, Kev.
Yeah, I guess so.
Good Vehicle by Ides of March, because that baby just kicks.
What does that do?
From
the beginning.
Bumps.
It just reaches in. It does what you just said it did.
So that's the one. I think you vary it. I think you want, you know, some songs you want to lull people in. And
right.
Some days with our show, we like to lull people in.
Right.
Some days we want to just come right out of the box
exactly.
And go Vehicle.
And go what? Okay, he's looking.
A few weeks ago.
There it is. Yeah, you're right.
Right away.
There's no downtime on that song right there.
God
no
bless
downtime.
You, Jim Peterick.
He knew what he was doing. And it's still a hit. It's still on the jukeboxes. The kids are still playing it in the discos. Hi, everybody. I'm Bill. That's Wendy. You know Steve. Kevin's in the booth. If you call up, you'll probably talk to Kevin first. You can call or text us at any point during today's proceedings, 312-981-7200. We'd be thrilled to hear from you.
I hate to start out, and I don't know if you want to start out with this, but since we're talking about rock and roll,
mm-hmm.
An interesting video that I noticed this morning. There was this all-star jam last night
mm-hmm.
for a guy that I was not familiar with.
A man who looks a lot like Captain Kangaroo.
He does.
Doesn't he? That's not why they were doing this tribute to him, because he looked like Captain Kangaroo. But as a side note, he looks a lot like Captain Kangaroo.
He does a little bit. I can't find the story right now. All right.
Bruce Hampton?
It was Colonel Bruce, I believe.
The Colonel.
Colonel Bruce Hampton. I never heard of him before. He's like a sessions guy,
oh.
a jam guy.
Okay.
The grandfather of the jam band scene is what he's known as. And they put together this big concert in Hotlanta to celebrate his 70th birthday. And it's big time jam session with lots of famous people. You've got Peter Buck from REM. You've got John Popper playing
mm-hmm.
harmonica from Blues Traveler.
Mm-hmm.
Warren Haynes
mm-hmm.
from the Allman Brothers Band and Government Mule.
Billy Bob Thornton.
Yeah, he was there.
Well, he fronts a band called the Boxmasters. In
yeah.
addition to being an actor, he also has a band. He's
actually, not bad. I know.
He's really pretty good. He really is.
Some members of Widespread Panic, Fish, just a bunch of musicians. There's this child prodigy who I've seen at the Fernando Jones Blues Camp, the Chicago
mm-hmm.
Blues Camp, Blues Kids. He's just up there jamming this, like, I think he's like 12 to 14 years old, like
oh,
just ripping
impressive.
It.
Yeah.
And this Colonel Bruce Hampton is singing a Grateful Dead song, Love Light.
Yeah.
And he's loving it, and he's jamming. He had done another song before. Again, this is all in celebration of his 70th birthday.
Sure.
And then he kind of stops playing for a minute. He points to, I guess, one of the 10 million guitarists to, like, hey, you take it now.
Yeah.
And then he kind of looks like he's wobbling a little bit, and he completely collapses over a speaker.
Uh-huh.
And hits the floor of the stage.
Yeah.
The band continues playing.
The band keeps playing.
I know the show must go
on.
The
show must. It's the oldest It's the oldest axiom in show business, Wendy. The show must go on.
Bill, I was late getting the kids ready today because Jim and I were watching this in disbelief. A good 5 minutes go by.
And he's on the ground.
And he's on the ground. And this little child prodigy guitarist, the colonel slumped over right next to him, and the kid kind of looked down like, whoa, that's weird, but keeps playing because he's a kid.
Yeah.
He's looking at all these other adults, and no one's stopping. John Popper is looking at the colonel who has collapsed but will not stop playing the harmonica. At least 5 minutes go by. They're Now, where's the stage manager?
Somebody should have intervened. There's no question.
He ended up dying.
He died?
Yeah.
Yes. And, you know, it's weird because there were various shots. There were, like, people in the crowd who were, you know, taking video on their phone of this concert, watched a little of that.
But nobody stood up and said, hey,
I think
Bruce Hampton needs our help.
Bill, there were, like, 20 people on stage jamming. And at some point, there's one dude who starts raising his hand, like, to get the crowd together.
Yeah.
And it's like, wait, this guy is down. Whatever video I watched was the full stage.
Yeah.
And they show him going wobbly, and then he falls over. And then whoever's shooting this video gets a close-up of the colonel down there. So you can see he's kind of moving a little bit. But somebody should have tried to resuscitate the man.
But it was in an unnatural, like, to see him fall to the ground, not that there's a natural way to do it.
Ask Jim Morrison about that.
But you could go, wow, the music moved him so much that it knocked him off his feet. It wasn't like that. You'd say to yourself, that man's in need of some help.
And he's just laying there, and the band played
on.
It's
going.
That Popper's good, though.
Yeah, John Popper.
Oh, my God. Hi, Brian.
The Blues Traveler.
Hey, you guys. You guys know who Dick Shawn is, don't you?
Yes, the comedian who had a similar story.
Same thing. Yep. He was on stage, and he was doing his act, and he, I think, suffered a heart attack and collapsed on stage, and everybody was, like, laughing and clapping, and they let him lay there for a while there before anybody realized.
They were sure he was kidding.
But he's a comedian.
Right.
This guy's a 70-year-old right. dude jamming like hell on the guitar moments ago.
And then they canceled Love American Style.
The whole same kind of thing, though, was like, you can't imagine singing to the audience watching this guy going down. Everybody's like, oh, that's hilarious. Oh, my God. No, he's dead.
Dick Shawn's the way he operated. Wendy, if you saw him, you'd know him in a second. Very silvery hair, a tall, thin guy. He was prone to do stuff like that, like pretend he was dying on stage.
So it looked kind of in the
and
ordinary.
Nobody came to help him, and he died.
Oh, my God.
He died.
All right, well, I just can't believe that these musicians, no one even went to just go, hey, buddy, are you okay? No one did. For 5 minutes.
Brian, thank you for the call.
Brian.
You know who else this happened to is one of the Globetrotters, and it may have been Curly Neal. Now, Curly didn't end up dying.
I thought he was Curly.
No, he was not shot. Curly Neal? No.
I thought he was.
One of the Globetrotters was in the middle of his Globetrotter act and started getting woozy and fell to the ground, and the other Globetrotters were doing bits with him.
Were they throwing the shredded up paper from the bucket on top of him?
Yeah, instead of water, they gave him confetti. One of the guys took his shoe off and put it under his nose as though it was smelling salts. They were sure he was kidding, and he ended up not dying, whichever of the Globetrotters it was. But this guy, Bruce Hampton, the story ends very, very sadly. Although, or did it?
And that's what we should discuss.
Yeah.
Because Jim and I are watching it this morning, he's like, oh, that's horrible. And it is. It's horrible. But then I go, you know what? The bright side is he got his 70th celebration, his 70th birthday celebration. He got to jam on stage with all these people. He was loving every second of it. And boom. Gone.
Right. Do you know, had he opened the gifts or were they still coming?
No one knows, Steve. That's a great question. But nobody knows.
That would be a drag.
Right.
Just earlier in March, Sib Hashian, the drummer for the band Boston, dies mid-performance on a cruise ship. Boston was doing a performance, the Boston Cruise.
Yeah.
He died. I don't know. We have to discuss. Is that a way to go? I mean, it's tragic that someone has died, but, I mean, boom.
To go out doing what you love.
Oh, my God.
Who wouldn't want? All right, let's take a quick break and then discuss this further.
We got 30 seconds till the EAS test.
Oh.
This is our favorite part of the day.
This should be good. this should be good.
The experimental aircraft?
Yes. Yes.
But then, you know, jump in, 312-981-7200.
Not during the EAS test.
Oh, no, we can't take
For all that
calls.
Is holy, please do not do that.
But is that, I mean, it's terrible that someone has died, but is that a way to go?
Right.
I don't know. We'll find out after the test.
All right.
Hit it. All right, big celebration for Colonel Bruce Hampton Monday night. He is known as the grandfather of the jam band scene, 70 years old. He's completely jamming with this all-star lineup, and then while doing a Grateful Dead song, Love Light, he kind of points to another guitarist to come forward, and then he kind of looks a little woozy and wobbly, and he collapses over a speaker, and he has since died. I don't know if he died right on stage, but the band played on for at least 5 minutes, and no one went up to say, "Hey, man, are you okay?"
Yeah.
They just left him there. It was very bizarre.
Wendy, I've died on stage, and anyone who saw me at the Holiday Star Plaza knows exactly what I'm referring to. Long 45 minutes.
312-981-7200. Tom is on the line. Hi, Tom.
Hi. How you doing, guys?
Good, Tom.
Great show, as usual.
Well, thank you.
Bill, I'm older than you guys are, but I remember a show from the late 50s called Pinky Lee.
Sure, of course.
Pinky Lee had his own peanut gallery and very loud houndstooth coat and a matching hat.
Yeah.
And he'd come out and sing a song and do a real heavy, you know, choreographed dance and went down. And all the kids in the peanut gallery were going, "Go, Pinky, go, yay!" And Pinky had a heart attack on stage.
And was that the end of him?
I don't think so.
He recuperated, I hope?
I didn't see any stage manager running out and doing CPR. This is probably a little pre-CPR time. But, the kids thought it was all part of the act.
Sure, it's fun to watch a man fall down pretend he's dying. Man,
Daddy, Pinky's turning blue.
Bluey.
He matched his houndstooth coat after a little while there.
Yeah. Tom, Pinky Lee's real last name is the same as mine. We're not related at all.
Pinky Left?
That's his real name. Well,
I'm going to call you that now. I love it.
Please do. What an honor that would be.
Pinky Left.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Tom. Appreciate it. Have a great week.
Have a good day. Bye.
Take
care.
Thank
you. But I think it's kind of a good way to go.
You're done. I mean, honestly, no one's hoping to die doing anything, but eventually, spoiler alert, you're going to. So why not go out doing what you love? And in this case, it was performing with other musicians at a tribute to him.
I know. That's what I mean. Is a birthday present a death day present?
Right. It's circle of life, Wendy. Circle of life.
I
would love, at some point, if we could pick, I love playing tennis. If it happened during a tennis match,
Look at Alan Thicke. Wasn't he playing hockey when he took ill?
Right.
And for me, it's right between traffic and your money with Orion Samuelson.
On that note, we're going to take a quick break, and I want to tell you about something that is delicious. Mother's Day right around the corner. It's a week from Sunday, and Sherry's Berries is back in action, offering huge freshly dipped strawberries starting at $19.99 plus shipping. And right now you can double the berries for just $10 more. Why wouldn't you?
Here's what you get to do. Pick your delivery date, and these berries are guaranteed to arrive fresh and delicious, or you get your money back. Now, you may think that you've seen gourmet dipped strawberries before, but you've never seen anything like these. They look good. They taste good. They taste amazing. Sherry's berries are huge, sweet, juicy, and covered in decadent toppings like chocolate chips, chopped nuts, white milk, and dark chocolatey goodness.
Sherry's berries are an unexpected gift that will put a smile on any mom's face. Just get some for yourself as well. The only way to get this amazing berries deal starting at just $19.99 is to visit berries.com. You click on the microphone in the top right-hand corner, and we have a little promo code for you. It's Bill and Wendy.
That's berries, berries.com. And again, that code is Bill and Wendy when you click on the mic. Now, this amazing deal isn't going to last long, and Mother's Day, as you know, is right around the corner, so be sure to order now.
That code again, Bill and Wendy, BILLANDWENDY.
I was waiting for this to kick in too, Wendy. I don't know that this kicks in. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and it's Wendy, and today we're playing music that doesn't kick in.
No, that's lame. I feel like I'm in a dentist chair right now. Hi, Dr. Paul.
You need to floss a lot more, by the way. A lot more. Did you see Jimmy Kimmel last night, by any chance?
I've heard the audio.
Boy, this is powerful.
I love this guy, and I start loving him more and more every time he weeps.
Jimmy has, from time to time, been emotional on the show, and last night was no exception. For those of you, if you watch the show regularly, and I've mentioned this on the show before, I don't have any allegiance to one particular show at 10:35 anymore.
Like, I don't watch any of them.
You don't watch any of them?
Nope.
No?
No. 10:30 at night, I'm catching up on other things that I've waited to watch because I've been busy all night. And then I usually watch the clips of Fallon and Kimmel on YouTube or Twitter. They post it very quickly thereafter.
I have no rhyme or reason, but some nights I go Colbert, some nights one of the Jimmys, some nights the other of the Jimmys.
I have never watched Stephen Colbert.
Oh, no?
Ever.
He's really good. They all are good in their own ways.
Seems like a smarter show.
It you know what?
That's why I don't watch
more
it. Is that what you're saying?
Maybe. No. It's a different approach.
I find myself, if something big has happened in the news that day, I will, because of what Steve just said, I will go Colbert's way because I think that will be handled in the monologue a little bit better, maybe.
Yeah, it's just he approaches things a little differently than typical
right
late night show.
I agree with you. I agree. So yesterday, Jimmy Kimmel comes on to do his monologue, and you can tell he looks very emotional. He looks like he's been crying, quite honestly. And if you'll remember, we talked about this with him a few weeks ago when Don Rickles died. He came out and did a little bit of the monologue and then started to talk about Don Rickles and was extremely choked up at the loss of Don Rickles. Well, Jimmy didn't do any shows last week. It was kind of an unscheduled week off. And I didn't think much of it.
Because his son was born. Oh, I'm sorry.
It ended up being that.
They didn't say that's why he was off?
I don't remember seeing it anywhere. I just remember turning the show on two different occasions and going, wait, this show was from a week or so ago. Why would they run it so quickly? You know, usually it wouldn't run a rerun a week later. But that happened twice last week. So yesterday he came out and he explained that, yes, the reason he was off last week was that his son was born. And then we'll take it from there. We'll run a little bit of the audio. And it does get very emotional. Listen to the monologue from last night.
I have a story to tell about something that happened to our family last week. I'm sorry, you know, I try not to get emotional, but it was a scary story. And before I go into it, I want you to know it has a happy ending, okay? So when I'm telling this, don't get too upset. Leave that to me. But a little over a week ago on Friday, April 21st, my wife, Molly, gave birth to a boy, a baby boy. His name is William John Kimmel. Thank you very much. We call him Billy. It was an easy delivery. 6 pushes, he was out. And he appeared to be a normal, healthy baby until about 3 hours after he was born. We were out of the delivery room. We moved to the recovery room. Our whole family was there. And we introduced him to his 2.5-year-old sister. She was cute with him. We were happy. Everything was good. My wife was in bed relaxing. And when a very attentive nurse at Cedars-Sinai Hospital, her name is Nanoush, was checking him out and heard a murmur in his heart, which is common with newborn babies, but she also noticed he was a bit purple, which is not common. So she asked me to come with her, and my wife and I assumed it would be nothing. Our daughter had a heart murmur, too, and we didn't notice that he wasn't the color he was supposed to be. So I accompanied Billy and the nurse, went down the hall to another part of the hospital, the neonatal ICU, where another excellent nurse named Ann checked him out and called the doctor in. And now all of a sudden it felt serious. And the room started to fill up. More doctors and nurses and equipment started coming in. And they determined he wasn't getting enough oxygen into his blood, which, as far as I understand or understood at the time, was most likely one of two things, either his heart or his lungs. And you hope it's the lungs because sometimes they have fluid in them after delivery, and it's potentially a minor thing. But they did an X-ray, and his lungs were fine, which meant his heart wasn't. So now more doctors and nurses and equipment come in. And it's a terrifying thing. You know, my wife is back in the recovery room. She has no idea what's going on. And I'm standing in the middle of a lot of very worried-looking people, kind of like right now. who are trying to figure out what the problem is. It's Friday night, and so they call a pediatric cardiologist, Dr. Evan Zahn, who, when they called him, was picking his mother up from the airport. Luckily, her plane was not delayed because he got to the hospital very quickly. They did an echocardiogram, which is a sonogram of the heart, and found that Billy was born with a heart disease, something called tetralogy of Fallot with pulmonary atresia. It's hard to explain. Basically, the pulmonary valve was completely blocked, and he has a hole in the wall between the left and right sides of his heart. And then they brought my wife in, and they wheeled her in, and Dr. Zahn told her what was going on and what our options were, and we decided to take him to Children's Hospital, where there's a world-renowned cardiac surgeon who is, by all accounts, a genius. His name is Dr. Vaughn Starnes. So we put the baby in an ambulance to Children's Hospital, Los Angeles, and on Monday morning, Dr. Starnes opened his chest and fixed one of the two defects in his heart. He went in there with a scalpel and did some kind of magic that I couldn't even begin to explain. He opened the valve, and the operation was a success. It was the longest 3 hours of my life. It was a success. So, they didn't do everything. He'll have to have another open heart surgery in 3 to 6 months to close those holes, but they want to wait until he's bigger, and then he'll have a third, hopefully non-invasive procedure sometime maybe in his early teens to replace the valve he has now. So this poor kid, this is what he looked like on Monday. But this is what he looked like yesterday. Poor kid, not only did he get a bad heart, he got my face.
So what do you make of that?
What I love so much about Jimmy Kimmel is he is a genuine person.
Yeah.
He's funny,
yep.
But he is real. And, we look to late night TV and we want to laugh. But, we're all experiencing life. Life happens around us. So it's very unique and comforting, I think, to see real people or to see a genuine person on stage instead of just somebody cracking jokes.
Right, right.
Thank God his son is okay.
That was a very smart move at the beginning to say this story has a happy ending.
Oh, because don't you hate when people do that?
Yeah, yeah, because it very likely couldn't have had a happy ending, and you don't know how to... it was such an honest couple of minutes there anyway. And it was really smart of him to say at the very beginning, don't worry, the story has a happy ending. If you watch his show or any of the shows with any regularity, in a way, and the better hosts are really good at doing this. Carson was a master at this. Ellen DeGeneres is a master at this. Letterman was to some extent, too, where you kind of feel like you know them because you watch them every day and you go, I know that guy, I know that girl. I watch them or listen to them every day. So it's a major thing in his life. Not easy to share it in front of not just a studio audience, but knowing America's watching you as you're relaying the awful details of potentially losing his child there. And I thought he handled it beautifully.
He did, and I understand the getting choked up there. And the Don Rickles, I guess I get too, but he's menopausal because that's what happens to people where they get really emotional about this is his son,
right.
And a potential life-threatening illness.
Yeah,
but
yeah, yeah.
You know, now Rickles, who's going to make him cry next?
I love that he did that he wasn't afraid. There's this school of thought in show business where it's not just the show goes on, but hey, you're out there to make fun of the events of the day, and this has no place on the show. But no, it did. That's an important part of him and his life, and he handled it beautifully.
And that's what I loved. It shows we're all humans.
Yeah, no question about it.
Well, congrats to him.
Yeah.
His son, Billy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Named after you, of course.
Yes, maybe it was named after me. We'll take a quick break, and then there's more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right. It is a Tech Tuesday. Bridget Carey is not with us today.
She's fed up with our nonsense.
No, she's out on assignment. So we have CNET's Ian Schur. He's an executive editor at CNET. Go to CNET.com. I've been going to CNET.com for a million years. Love it. How are you, Ian?
I'm doing all right. I have not been going there a million years, but I've been going there for quite a while.
You waited until the internet was invented to start visiting it, right?
You know, look, I'm not going to say that anyone should not have tried to go to CNET before the internet when it was existing. So,
right.
It was very limited in assistance back then, a million years ago. But I will say, anytime I'm buying any electronic or computer device, I always go to CNET.com to read your reviews because you guys do a great job over there.
Well, thank you.
A weird thing in the news, and I showed Bill a picture of her. There is a sex robot. This is according to reports in the news. It's from a company called Real Doll, and it's powered by artificial intelligence. And here's, first of all, she's very beautiful, but she looks very much like Kim Kardashian, in my opinion.
She looks like all the Kardashians together, kind of.
She does, like kind of a mashup.
A bit of everybody.
And now she can talk and learn things.
Oh, so she's already ahead of the Kardashians. Good for her.
All right, Ian, what do you know about, what's her name? Harmony.
Yeah, so it's an interesting idea. It's a company called Real Doll, and it's a really interesting idea. There's this constant conversation in Silicon Valley about where AI is headed, and I'm sure you've seen movies where they debate whether or not these things are going to either take us over and kill us all or become the central part of our lives and actually push out real humans, and we all end up dating robots.
Oh.
This is an interesting idea. There are actually studies out there that believe that maybe not sex, but broadly companionship, something that robots are going to become more and more involved in. Specifically, when you look at communities like in Japan, there's an aging population. They're not growing as fast. So you need people to help take care of elderly people, and robots will be able to help with that type of stuff. So this is not a surprising thing to see happen. People are always going to push the boundaries of what is doable with robots, and I mean doable in many different connotations there, but
sure.
It's an interesting idea, right? And we'll see if it ends up going anywhere. But, you know, it's not that far different from all of the sex toys and stuff you see out there anyway, right? It's just now we're making it look more human and we're adding kind of Siri to it almost.
Although now Harmony has been said to smile, blink, and frown. She can hold a conversation. She can tell jokes and she can quote Shakespeare.
Oh, wow.
I'd love to hear her material.
There's something for everyone. That's how it goes.
I guess. Well, that's Harmony, and for the small price tag of $15,000.
That's a good price for
start
a
saving.
Sex robot. I'd get one that wasn't in the mood. That would be unfair.
Can you return it? Is there a warranty on that?
Sure.
I am not aware of any returns or warranties, but if I were them, I'd say it's all sales are final person.
All right. And Microsoft, focusing a little bit on education, they had an event in New York. Why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah, so totally down their end of the spectrum, right? So Microsoft, which you think of typically as that kind of boring-ish company that makes the Office software but also tries to sell you an Xbox, is trying to get more attention in schools because, frankly, the Chromebooks, you may have heard of these, they're Google-powered little cheap laptops. They are really killing it in U.S. schools. They're like half of the bug computers that are bought by U.S. schools are Chromebooks. So
my eighth grader has a Chromebook, and they sign it out at the beginning of the year. They have to take care of it. And the hardest part is to remind them to plug it in every night. So it's good. They take all their tests on it. It's pretty amazing.
There you go. Right. Yeah. And so the amount of technology in classrooms alone is incredible. If you don't look at it, if you haven't seen it for a while. Right. And so Microsoft believes that they need to catch up. And so they announced a new laptop that they're going to sell that is specifically focused on education. It's a little cheaper than the more expensive ones out there. And a new version of Windows, that's the software that powers most PCs, that is specifically designed to be more secure and more reliable for schools. We'll see if it actually makes any difference, but it's interesting to see Microsoft pushing with this type of stuff.
Another thing that's going on in the tech world right now, CNET's Ian Schur on the line with us. Everywhere I look, Apple Watches are. You can buy new bands for them. It seems like everywhere you look, you can find something for your Apple Watch. But what's going on with the Apple Watch?
Well, that's the thing. We don't know. Like, Apple won't tell us how well it's selling. They're actually having their earnings and very soon, and so we're going to learn what their profits were. And by the way, it has enough money saved up that it's larger than most companies, I mean, most countries, in terms of the amount of profits it has sitting around. But we don't know how well the watch is doing. And so all we can do is take signs from the market, right? How, whether they have partnerships, how many people are selling them in stores. So we found out that Amazon, Google Maps, and a couple others have actually stopped supporting the Apple Watch. And they've removed support for it. They used to have little apps on there. Google actually later in the day yesterday reversed itself and said they're going to return support. But it's an interesting sign because most of the research out there and the surveyors out there say that the Apple Watch is actually one of the most successful smartwatches. But we don't know how well smartwatches are doing. And it doesn't seem like too many tech companies are that excited by it.
I got to tell you, it was like a status symbol when they came out. A lot of people, especially Apple fans, went and bought it immediately. Steve Bertrand, I don't know if you have an Apple Watch, but there are four of us here right now. Not one of us has an Apple Watch.
No, I don't have an Apple Watch.
And no desire to get one. Who's the target demo for this Apple Watch? Because honestly, I don't physically know anybody.
Guys like Ian.
Do right? you have one?
So actually, you joke. I actually have one on right now.
Oh.
A survey of five, but there's one. But you know, the thing is that, so for me, I was really interested in smartwatches broadly a long time ago, because especially back when I was covering Apple full-time at the Wall Street Journal, it was really hectic. And a lot of people can relate to this, right? There's a ton of email coming in. If you have a really high-pressure job, there's just constant flow of communication. And so I was able to use the watch to actually cut down on how many emails I was checking, which meant that when I was, like, at dinner with my wife, I wasn't constantly checking my phone, right? I would,
yeah.
If something really mattered, they would be able to get me on my watch or whatever, and it would work. And Apple, inside the iPhone, has a VIP system, so you can mark it so that VIPs only hit the watch and everyone else doesn't. So I was able to really set it up. And my wife jokes around that it saved our marriage. I think she's actually not kidding that much. Like, I was using my phone too much all the time because I was stressed out by work. So that's been really helpful. There's also the sports crowd, right? Apple's really pushing hard on this with their advertising, because the heart rate monitor and the swim sensor and all this other stuff that it does are according to our test at CNET, really good. And so people can rely on them to be able to more accurately and, by the way, cheaper, actually track their workouts. So those are all the reasons why there are people out there who would use it, but that's not everybody. And generally speaking, watches are becoming less popular. Before I bought a smartwatch, the first smartwatch I bought was a Pebble 2 years ago. I hadn't worn a watch for 10 years, and I don't think I'm alone, right? You're carrying around a phone, it has the clock in it. Why would you ever care to worry about putting on a watch, right? It's unnecessary. So. But I found it very helpful for me, and I still use it, even though most people make fun of me for it.
Well, thank you for that. Thanks for admitting that. We appreciate it. He's Ian Schur. You can find him at CNET.com, executive editor. Thank you so much on this Tech Tuesday. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Take care, Ian. Thanks so much. We'll take a quick break. Steve has the news, and then there's a lot more show. It's Bill and it's Wendy on WGN.
Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And, Steve, you can get in on this as well. Have you ever felt like you were awkward in a situation?
Oh, all the time.
I do, too. And it's, Bill, I know you're going to say no, but I've seen it happen.
No.
I think it's cute.
Yeah.
I think being awkward is when you're being real.
Yeah.
And I know some people are embarrassed about that, but there's a new book called Awkward, The Science of Why We're Socially Awkward and Why That's Awesome. And the author of this book is on the line with us, Ty Toshiro. Ty, how are you today?
Hey, I'm doing well. How you doing?
Listen, I know that we all want to be smooth over everything when we're in situations, and I really try to do that, but every once in a while you'll say something that you regret or you tell a joke that falls flat, and it does feel uncomfortable. You feel your face flushing for a minute, but we've all been there, and it's okay, isn't it?
It is. You know, everybody has awkward moments, and it's usually okay. It's not life-threatening or a malicious sort of act. It's just an accident, a small accident usually. And but we do get really embarrassed in those moments, and your face will flush. And there's actually some interesting research that shows that your face flushing like that is actually a really good thing, because it shows other people that you're sorry for what happened, that you understand the situation. And when people don't blush, that's actually when they have some trouble. They're disliked in those situations. So as long as you address what happened and say, hey, I'm sorry, people are usually just fine.
I hate to bring Sean Spicer into this, and I don't want to get political, but when he talked about Adolf Hitler not using gas and then never just said, where did that come from? Why did I say that? Wouldn't that have been a better way to make that go away?
Yeah, that's interesting, some of the things that are going on politically right now.
Mm-hmm, I bet.
Yeah.
Talk sure. about awkward.
Yeah.
Oh, boy, there's a whole psychological studies people can do on that. But, you know, there's awkward moments and awkward people, and usually those are mistakes, so they're accidents. Sometimes I think awkward moments occur or discomfort occurs for a lot of people because people aren't necessarily dealing in the truth, or people are trying to convince people of something with some spin. And I think that's a different kind of motive for an awkward moment, because the awkward moment's created by your expectations not aligning because the person's trying to create a spin. I think that's different than when someone just accidentally says something that they really had no intent of saying.
And it happens to all of us. I mean, really, so, you know, in a lot of our cases, our brain works a little quicker than our mouth does. And there have been times I've said things on the air and it's like, well, I did not mean to say it that way. You know, you say it in the wrong context or something. And is it best to just admit it?
I think so. You know, there's some great laboratory studies where they'll have people commit these social faux pas or commit these gaffes. And they'll randomly assign people to either address it directly or to just try to gloss it over. And the people who address it directly come out of there not only being okay, but oftentimes they're liked a little bit more because they were genuine and real in a circumstance when it was hard to do so.
What has changed in pop culture, do you think, Ty, where television shows and rock stars and comedians almost thrive if they're more awkward? I think of shows like The New Girl and Big Bang Theory, Mindy Project and Seinfeld. All those shows are built around awkward situations and how the characters handle being in awkward situations.
It is amazing, actually, that we've kind of entered this golden age of awkwardness or being a nerd.
Yeah.
And it wasn't always that way. You know, when I was a teenager, being in the nerd group was like the social kiss of death.
Right.
But now it is kind of trending. I think the internet has been good for awkward people. Awkward people tend to have unusual interests that aren't necessarily mainstream. And, you know, early on, those chat rooms and those kinds of things gave people with unique interests a way to find each other. And that then turned into even meeting face-to-face, things like Comic-Con, I think, came out of that. And now on social media, it's even easier for people with pretty unique interests to find each other. So it's neat to see, you know, and I think it resonates broadly. Shows like The Big Bang Theory, because we all feel a little bit awkward. And so it's in an exaggerated form in shows like that. But I think everybody can relate to it.
We're talking to Ty Toshiro. His book is called Awkward, The Science of Why We're Socially Awkward and Why That's Awesome. You have, like, Chris Hardwick, the Nerdist. You have these self-proclaimed nerds or geeks. I'm married to a Star Wars aficionado. I work with a guy who collects toys. I mean, we're all
a freak.
But we all kind of are okay to open up to that now. You're right. In high school, you didn't want to be a member of the nerd herd, but now it's kind of okay.
It really is. And I think that's wonderful. I mean, it's great. I wish I'd been around when I was in high school. I think that would have been nice. But I think it's nice for the young people I talk to that they feel more comfortable with doing their own thing. And that's not just good for awkward people or nerdy people. It's good for everybody, I think, when people can more fully embrace who they naturally are.
Ty, what happened that made you realize this is more than just a cultural phenomenon, but it needs to be put into a book? Did something particular happen, or is it just something that built up over the years?
You know, I guess I just started noticing that some of my friends who are socially awkward and who were struggling with social life, maybe they felt kind of lonely or felt out of place. I thought, boy, that's really too bad because these were great people with great hearts and really good intention who could be really valuable as a friend or as a member of a group. And I had this thought, I thought, if they could just skip the first 5 minutes of social interactions,
yeah,
they'd probably be just fine. You know, that's the part that really gets awkward people. And so when I went to look to see if there were books about social awkwardness, there really weren't any that had a scientific focus or a research-based focus. And that's how I got into it. So it's been a fun one to write.
Now, you mentioned that the internet has kind of become a playground for awkward people, and Comic-Con, C2E2 was just here in town. But is this technology also producing more awkward people in the way of youngsters who are on social media all the time? I have a teenage boy who plays video games at home and doesn't have face-to-face contact. Doesn't that create more awkward people?
It certainly could. You know, it gives them less practice, which is problematic if they've got their head down looking at their phone. Sometimes you walk by a group of teens, for example, and you can tell they're all friends, but they're all looking at their phone and they're not talking to each other. Mm. That's certainly a problematic kind of situation. But the good news is that humans are pretty, resilient.
Yeah.
So even if a kid is doing that a lot, if they need to turn it around, they still have the capability to do that. It's not like they lose the capacity intellectually or in the brain functioning to be able to do so.
Don't you also think parents say to themselves, if they have a child that seems a little socially awkward, they look at guys like Steve Jobs or Bill Gates or Mark Cuban and they go, well, that might be the next Mark Cuban. Even though he seems awkward now at age 9 or 10, he could grow up to be this, you know, incredible CEO, a captain of industry. It could end up really, really good.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, I've had a lot of parents approach me about this topic, and one of the things I'll hear parents of awkward kids say is, my kid is so stubborn. You know,
yeah,
they're just unusually stubborn. And I always say, you know what, with a loving home environment and the right kind of encouragement and opportunity, that stubbornness is going to turn into determination. And in fact, there's studies that show that awkward people have a really intense focus. They tend to have this great energy and enthusiasm for what they love. And although that can get them into trouble socially at
yeah.
times, or for parents can be a little bit of pain in the neck, you know, if you're patient with it, those qualities, those characteristics can really propel them to some extraordinary things.
We always make a joke. Our 14-year-old son, Dylan, is a little stubborn at times, and my husband and I always say, we're going to end up working for him someday, because mm-hmm. that's what will happen.
Yeah, you know, those things tend to temper naturally with time, and as they find the good outlets to channel that stubbornness, to channel that determination, then you really start to see kids take off.
Someone has just texted us, 312-981-7200, and said awkwardness is what made The Office such a great show.
Yeah.
And seriously, because you loved Michael Scott, you felt sorry for him, and then you realized, well, he is kind of a jerk, you know? It was very awkward.
It was. You know, there were a number of awkward characters, I guess, on that show. And one of the things I like about shows like that or shows like Silicon Valley are that they represent the broad range of awkward people. You know, it's not just one type of person. And some awkward people are unlikable. You know, they just they don't have their heart in the right place necessarily, but they're no more likely to be that way than anybody else. You know, plenty of awkward people, I'd say most awkward people, are good folks who want to do the right thing, and they're just a little bit clumsy when it comes to these social interactions.
All right. Well, thank you for it's okay to embrace your inner nerd and your inner awkwardness. Would you say that's a fact?
I think that's true, and I think it's actually a good thing for people to do.
Awkward, the science of why we're socially awkward and why that's awesome. Ty Toshiro is on the line with us. Where's the best place to get this book?
They can just go to awkwardbook.com, and there will be all kinds of options about where they can pick it up. And it's in bookstores as well.
Ty, thanks so much. Greatly appreciate it. Have a great week.
Thank you.
We'll take a little break and then a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right. We have these lights in the studio that Phil Murdoch one of the engineers here at WGN Radio has installed to get our attention. It's hard not to notice them, and Kevin is in control of the button. He's supposed to flash them when we need to go to a break.
It's a warning light saying your time is up. We need to provide a break.
Or it warns you to say, stand by, spots are ending in 5 seconds, so be ready. Mm-hmm. And Kevin is abusing his power.
Yeah, it looks like a lightning storm here. No way. All day,
yes,
every
you
day.
Are.
These are the best things ever.
You startle Wendy every time you light those up.
I know, but you jumped earlier. It was pretty funny. I can't tell you how many times I'll be giving you a 1 minute countdown, and then a 30, and then a 10, and I'm looking at you guys.
We ignore you.
And I just know you're not listening to me. So this is great for that reason.
But now we're ignoring you and the lights at the same time.
I can't ignore them. I'm going to have a seizure, I feel. Stop it.
It's very intense.
Next, we're going to have like the buzzer.
That's a good idea, like an air horn.
No, I mean like the collars that dog the electric fence.
Right.
Oh, I like that.
Looks like you're on a game show from here. I'm seeing, like,
when those lights light up. Green team.
You can go on WGNradio.com and you can look at the video stream. And Kevin, every once in a while, it's like a strobe light now.
I know.
It's like this is Kevin's version of a disco ball.
It's like we're in Studio 54.
And by the way, if you go to WGNradio.com, if you're on the app or if you're on the website, you can go to the bonus stream. You can find us. You can just listen to that all the time. Mm-hmm. And then there is no dead air because right at 12 noon when we go to the stream, it'll just cross over.
It's like a miracle,
it is
Wendy.
Kind of
That's
a
what
miracle.
It is. It's miraculous. All right, so what Wendy just said is true. We will be on the stream from 12 to 1. You can also listen to Steve and the Wintrust Business Lunch right here.
But why would you?
I wouldn't. No, you have the option of doing one or both if you like.
Also, we're going to talk crime, by the way. There's this really cool crime book called The Crime Book, and we're going to talk all about serial killers, mafiosos. It's like the world of crime mm-hmm. from all of our history, and it looks really cool.
Right. So here's the game plan. All that happens later. Right now, a break and then some news. Kim will give you the news. And then when we return, two very funny guys, Greg Proops, who's been with us before, and Joel Murray, who has not been with us before, they will join us. So stick around. It's Bill and Wendy. It's Studio 54 on WGN. Hi, everybody.
Phil?
It's Bill and it's Wendy, and in studio with us right now, two hysterically funny guys, Greg Proops, who has been with us several times in the past, and Joel Murray, who has avoided every one of our invitations,
yes.
but finally gave in.
I was just walking by, and I saw you in the fishbowl here. I thought, what the heck?
Might as well come by.
Hello, they're Chicago.
Here. Nice to have both of you. You guys are here for a good reason. Whose Line Is It Anyway is taking place at the City Winery tonight and tomorrow night, and it's the two of you and who else?
Ryan, I can't remember.
No one?
The tall guy, Ryan
yeah.
Stiles.
Yeah.
And Jeff Davis, the guy who can sing really well.
Yeah. It's quite a foursome.
So, you know, there's us and there's dead weight, you know? we've been dragging Ryan around for years now.
And enough of this.
But apparently they pull rank and can stay in bed and we're out walking around in the cold rain.
That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, that doesn't seem right.
We have to go out in the morning and do telly and radio while Ryan luxuriates in the bathtub back in the room with his knees outside.
Oh, that ain't fair. That is not fair. Now, Greg, you, of course, a mainstay from the television version of Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Sure.
Joel, did you ever show up on the TV version of
it? No, I'm a complete interloper.
Yeah?
I'm an old friend of Ryan's, and I used to fill in at the Second City Santa Monica, and there was an opening, and he said, well, you try this out, and it's been 5 years, and they haven't kicked me out yet.
Mm. Yeah.
How fun to do it live at City Winery. I love that venue.
We haven't been. But we're excited.
It's very cool.
It'll
we
be
usually
fun.
Do kind of bigger venues, so it's going to be nice to do something intimate.
Intimate.
That means we'll be all over the audience sweating on them.
That's
they
okay.
can see our receding hairlines. It's going to be fun for them, I think. But we're still spry as mountain goats. We jump around, we sing, we dance. I was doing an interview last week with this guy who was maybe the worst radio interview I've ever done in my life. It was in Iowa. And I said, we jump around and we're really loud and we do a lot of music.
Yeah.
It's like a musical. And the guy goes, I hate musicals. And I almost went like, I hate radio. Why am I on? I haven't liked the wireless since Marconi invented it.
But it's great to be back in Des Moines.
Joel, I was talking to you off the air. Of course, you're a Cubs fan.
Huge Cub fan.
Nice
still
tie.
Ebullient. I have a Cub tie on. It was a lot of fun. I was here for all three World Series games. I brought my wife, who's a notorious jinx, for the third one, game five.
No.
And somehow they won. They got even got past Eliza Coyle Murray. So you knew they were a team of destiny.
Is it still, I mean, it's been months now, and we know it happened because we've seen it in the paper and we've seen it on TV. Does it still hit you that it finally happened? Does it throw you?
Yeah, and I coached a lot of Little League and stuff, and when we won the whole big World Series in Los Angeles one year, and it's not so much winning as the absence of blowing it.
Yeah.
And it's just this moment, you know, when they, you know, Bryant threw it to first base, and it was just like, oh my God, we didn't freaking blow it.
Right.
And he tried.
Yeah, we did our best. And Joe Patton made some interesting choices down the stretch. But I'm still pretty excited, though, but more relieved.
Yeah, I bet that is how Cubs fans
feel. That's what it comes down to, is just because at some point in your life, you realize as you're getting older and older, I may never see it. I may have my whole existence and never see it happen.
I knew a guy that used to be a vendor out at Wrigley, and he said there were so many people dropping ashes into the ivy every game that you had to line it with security guards.
Yeah.
But that was all the people that were never going to see the win. And then a couple of years ago, they dug out the whole warning track and replaced it with new stuff. And it was like, oh, all those people are now down in the Skokie Lagoons or something.
I hope some of the family members saved some ashes, didn't dispose of all of them, because then they can do it again.
Well, yeah, and we like to give them out at Halloween just to keep No, that's a little bit of my Uncle Irv. There you go. Enjoy.
Instead of Lick-A-Maids, you get Uncle Irv. I know what a baseball fan you are, Greg. Were you pulling for the Cubs last year?
Well, I was. We were on the road, it just so happens, last year during the playoffs, and the Giants staggered across the finish line and played the Cubs. So Joel and I were watching every playoff game backstage on his computer screaming, and finally I realized that we were not going to be able to do it, and nor should we have. We weren't the good team. So I started pulling for the Cubs, obviously. The last time the Cubs won the World Series, the Model T had come out 2 weeks earlier, and Theodore Roosevelt was president. The last time the Cleveland Indians won the World Series, Satchel Paige pitched for them.
Yeah.
So it had been a while for both those teams. So I like baseball enough that I was very excited to see the Cubs win. They're nice. Anybody but Boston is my rule.
You know who Wendy and I
talked to? In any sport.
In any sport.
In any sport.
The day after the Cubs won the World Series, Wendy and I had on Bert Hooten, just because when I was a kid, he was my favorite Cub player.
Really?
And even he said, you know, for all of us that ever put on the Cubs uniform, we all feel like we kind of won last night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bert Hooten, wow, you didn't go for the more attractive Paul Rushell?
Didn't go for Paul Rushell.
Rick's brother?
Yeah, Rick's slightly larger brother.
Wow. I remember meeting Bert Hooten at a minor league game in the 80s up in Oregon. He was pitching coach up there. He played in the World Series for the Dodgers, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
And do you remember his nickname?
No.
Happy. Because he had an 8-year career in the major leagues, didn't smile one time in 8 years.
Yeah, no.
Just refused.
Wow.
Not now.
Way to make a stand, Bert.
Speaking of Cubs.
That's a weird place to put your flag.
Right?
That's it. I'm not smiling.
This is the hill I die on, Grim Hill. I met Rick Monday years ago, who, of course, a famous Cub as well. And
flag saver.
He's been the Dodgers announcer for 1,000 years. So I went to the game, and my agent had told him, we had the same voice agent, I guess, at the time. We go back upstairs to meet him, and he's got his World Series ring on from 1981. And he goes, so you're a Giants, because Rick Monday has a deep and mellifluous, you know, sportscaster voice. So you're a Giants fan, eh? Well, go F yourself.
Really?
That's what he said when he met me.
The Dodger hate is strong.
That's crazy. That's so funny. Your brother Bill seems to have gotten tickets to every major sporting event that's happened over the last few years. How does he pull that off? He's everywhere.
Well, he saves his money. And he saves up for special things. He doesn't blow it. Well, he blows a lot of it on tipping a doorman and stuff like that and masseuses, but he saves his money. I think he actually got a Cubs ring out of the deal,
did
too.
He really
deserves it.
Yeah, free shoes for the rich kind of thing.
Yeah. Like,
yeah, who really needs a 108 diamond ring?
He doesn't get the ones the players get.
I don't know. We'll see. I haven't seen it yet, but supposedly, I just got a text the other day that says, the package has landed. And that was it.
Nothing else was said.
Now,
you saw what he did after the Cubs won the World Series. He somehow stole a Fox News microphone, and he went into the dugout and went into the clubhouse and interviewed players pretending he was from Fox Sports.
He's got a lot of time on his hands, and he was in the moment. He's a great guy.
And he and Eddie Vedder hanging out in all the Cubs games. I expected to see Bill at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame when Pearl Jam played. Was he there?
he wasn't there. And was Eddie there even?
Yeah. You know, David Letterman introduced them, inducted them into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
He just did the hot stove thing in Boston the other night. I've closed the lodge here with Eddie a few times, and he's a great time.
Yeah.
A great Chicago and a fine American.
Yep.
Is David Letterman the Unabomber now? What's happening with
that? It's even longer than what saw before, look? The beard.
Wow, dude.
He's going on tour with ZZ Top.
Wow. You're on permanent hunting vacation now? You used to work in New York. Well, he's from Indiana. What do you want?
Yeah.
But I don't get why you do that. I know people say, oh, you have to shave every day when you're on television all the time, so just let yourself go. Do it in another way.
Boo.
I mean,
right.
Have a beard, but groom it once in a while.
Yeah, get a Flowbee. Come on. Anything. It's only a matter of seconds. Yeah.
Joel, I've noticed, and I know you come from a large family, but the kids in the family tend to either go into show business or religion.
Yeah, I was hanging with nuns last night and went up to Regina Dominican. They named the stage after my sister, the nun.
Oh, they did.
50th anniversary of hanging out with that guy, Jesus.
What
an still
honor.
Hasn't put a ring on her finger. It was really cool. It was a very wonderful testament to her.
But so Bill got a ring, but your sister has been in the business for 50 years.
Package has not landed.
I couldn't help but thinking when I was looking at all these nuns, how many of them might have seen me naked on American Gods the night before. So it was a little scary, but anyway.
That is a weird feeling. Yeah. I would imagine.
Hi, sister. Yeah, forgive me.
Greg, here's a question.
They do.
You keep going back and forth between regular stand-up and improvisation. So
yes.
Is there any difference in your brain when you're thinking of things that fits one more than the other?
Well, I like stand-up is, you know, I get to talk about what I want. When you're in the improv group, you can't just stop and step out and go, here's my political opinion for 20 minutes. Yeah. Whereas I can do that in stand-up. And then in the podcast, I can say whatever I like. But I do improvise the podcast as well. So more and more I'm leaning toward not preparing ever. And just doing this kind of thing, which I really enjoy.
Yeah.
I don't mind stand-up. I still do it, and I still love it. I try to keep both. For instance, in this group, I'm like Ringo. I'm invited to play. I can keep a beat. But really, Ryan, you know, Ryan just points at the fence and hits taters.
Well, Greg also has enough brain to go around. He has to self-medicate to even put up with my little bit of intelligence that I have. So he tries to keep himself, you know, on a mild hum all the time just to put up with my ignorance.
I'm trying to remember on the show when you were doing the TV version of Whose Line Is It Anyway.
We still are, by the way.
You still are.
I'm the fifth version on fifth season on CW. We haven't come out yet, but soon.
No longer with Drew as the host. The host
Aisha.
Now is
Aisha Taylor.
Aisha Taylor.
Tall.
I love her.
She's lovely.
Tall.
From time to time, a special guest star would come in, and one particular week it was Robin Williams.
Yeah.
Were you were there for that week?
I wasn't, but I knew Robin because I'm from San Francisco, so I knew him over the years. And he's lovely. To be honest, a show like Whose Line Is It Anyway confines Robin Williams. He doesn't need games to be funny. The times I improvised with him in San Francisco, we would just get up and go.
Yeah.
And he'd be going 1,000 miles an hour. And then he'd get you in a headlock, and he was wildly strong and amazingly sweaty and hairy.
And hairy.
And so you'd be stuffed under his arm and your face rubbing up against his hairy breasts. And
I saw Robin Williams in like 1978 at the Copacabana in New York, and it was like Belushi and Aykroyd and Gilda Radner and all these people were there, and they put me at the end of the table, and I just laughed hysterically the whole time. But I was next to this white-haired guy who did not crack a smile the whole time, and I asked my brother afterwards, like, who's the dead wood you stuck me with at the end of the table? I go, well, that's Andy Warhol.
Oh,
well, that's different.
I thought it'd be either Warhol or Bert Hooten.
I was going to say, who's the one they called happy?
Let's see who can drop a better name during this interview.
Greg Proops is here and Joel Murray is here. They're performing as part of Whose Line Is It Anyway at the City Winery. You got a show tonight. You got a show tomorrow night. Visit citywinery.com/Chicago. All the info's there. We'll return in just a moment. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, Greg Proops, and Joel Murray in the studio with us. They're all going to join forces for a live version of Whose Line Is It Anyway at City Winery. It's happening tonight, tomorrow night. You can go to citywinery.com for all the details and for ticket information. Who else is going to be with you guys?
Ryan Stiles.
And Jeff Davis and our musical,
and Bob Derkesh on the piano.
Bob Derkesh is a musical director, Second City Toronto, for 25 years. We felt that there wasn't enough improvisational comedy in Chicago.
Yes. So true.
Right. It's like bringing water to Lourdes. We thought, you know, what this town's been missing for a good long time is people who just off the cuff it.
Where can we get a really good suggestion? That's what we were thinking.
Yeah. So we decided to come here. We're excited because we've never actually played inside Chicago. We played Owowa and
Joliet. The most dangerous town.
What's that other crap place we used to play with that had the college, remember, and the sound never worked?
We played in Elgin. Times.
Oh, yeah. At the Hemmings Auditorium.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Normal, is it?
Batavia.
Oh. Batavia.
I'm dropping names. We're dropping names. Oh. Earlier,
Batavia, yeah.
Now we're getting real
now scared. We're getting sad. So we played all around Illinois, but not in Chicago before. So
Hammond.
Exciting.
We were at the casino in Hammond, which is adjacent to
Did
Chicago.
Did you gamble in between shows or anything?
No, it was a frightening gig. We pretty much got in the car and left. One of those ones.
The fun thing about playing at casinos, I don't know if they still do this, but when I did stand-up, they wanted you done on the minute because every minute that the crowd's in there watching you, they're not losing money on the tables.
Yeah, I did a Harrah's gig where we did a Best of Second City show out there for 4 months, and without fail, the people in the front were guys that just lost $10,000 to $20,000.
Yeah.
And they're, hey, here I have a coupon. Go see the comedy show. And they'd be in the front just yelling at each other. You moron! I told you we should have left. And you're trying to do a show, and you'd have guys like slapping each other in the front seats. But
we played Onamia, Minnesota a couple nights ago.
A dry casino.
Oh, yeah. Fun.
A dry casino. So
why bother?
Yeah. It was like, wow. We opened with an apology, you know. And that we usually do an encore. And a big thing at the end, and that one we just wrapped it up, and they turned the music on, and we left.
But how a dry casino, it was everybody had a cigarette in one hand and a cup of coffee in the other hand. It looked like an AA meeting.
My name's Greg.
All right. I'm addicted to slots.
How long have you been on this tour?
Oh, we've only been out for about 5 days now, but we got another 20 days.
Yeah, we're going all over.
But it goes fast, doesn't it? You're hanging out with funny guys. You're goofing off. That's fun.
It's the best gig in town. Yeah, especially if the writer's strike had gone, we would have had the best gig in Los Angeles. But
No doubt.
It's really fun.
No doubt about that. Can I ask you really quickly, both of you have been in so many great things over the years, but Mad Men holds a special place in my heart. Was that as much fun as it seemed to be, Mad Men?
It was fabulous, and the words were amazing. They made you look really good, and everybody on the show was so excited to be on it, so everybody was really did their homework, and like Ham has a photographic memory, so everybody knew their lines and nobody messed around. But it was the best parties I've ever been to.
Really,
I mean, just you'd be handed an old fashioned the minute you walk in the door, and people would just get so hammered, and it was so good, and there was always good music involved, and just to see January Jones carried out of a bar is worth the price of admission. Anyway,
is that what started the whole resurgence with the Manhattans and the old fashions?
It did, right?
Well, we like to take credit for everything.
Because really, it seemed like all of a sudden they were popular.
Men seemed to be
again.
Dressing better too.
Yeah, what's with that? Yeah,
look at Bill.
Look, guy, barbers are back in business.
Yeah.
Everybody says this about John Hammond. You worked with him pretty regularly, that a more decent guy is impossible to find, and he's really funny, too, and there's nothing to not like about John Hammond.
He's
right?
a Cardinals fan. That might be a fault.
That's more than enough. Yeah. So there you go. That weighs everything else out.
I remember doing a gig with him a couple years ago, and he goes, I narrated the Cardinals' season of triumph when they won the World Series.
Yeah.
Then I did a gig with him the year after when they lost to Boston, and I said, hey, did you narrate the season of ignominy one as well? And he was like, I only know him from comedy, but he's a lovely guy.
He's a mensch.
Yeah.
We went to the Albert Pujols golf tournament in St. Louis, and he's the favorite.
By the way, I'm starting a law firm with Pujols.
Oh, yeah, good.
Albert Pujols. It's Pujols and Proops. Just thought I'd cheer everyone out.
I'd run that by you. But I thought I was going to get the inky underbelly tour of St. Louis from John Hamm, and we ended up literally moving a refrigerator for an older woman, and he stayed and painted her kitchen.
Wow.
Like, yeah, John, I'll see you back at the bar, buddy. But not my painting clothes. These are more my refrigerator moving stuff.
Wow, a nice guy, too.
On top of all everything else, who's the one guy or girl that you guys have always wanted to improvise with, but for one reason or another, it's just never happened, but you're dying to?
Oh, gee whiz. I don't know. What do you think?
John Stamos, probably.
John Stamos.
Yeah, he's just stunning.
Absolutely.
Rebecca Romijn.
Kelly Rebecca Romijn. Oh, yeah, she'd be good.
I don't know. We could improvise some people into some boxes.
We've been pretty lucky. I mean, I've been able to improvise with Robin. I got to work with Joan Rivers. I interviewed Jonathan Winters. I wouldn't say I improvised with him. So I don't know. I've been lucky as can be to be in a group where everyone's better than me, which is my advice to you if you're a young improviser out there. Although why you would be a young improviser listening to the radio at this hour, surely you're a bike messenger or something.
I was roommates in college with Dave Pasquese, who's one of the improvisers in the world, and yeah. I was lucky there. And I was in the Second City with Timmy Meadows and Chris Farley, and we had some good times, yeah. Needless to say. So I've been very fortunate along the way, and I'm real fortunate to be hanging onto these guys for dear life.
It is quite a troop, isn't it?
Yeah. Coming from slow comedy to play with these guys is literally walking into batting practice with the Yankees all of a sudden.
is Bert Hooten there? I don't know. I just feel like I need to mention
Bert
Hooten. Bert
Hooten in there.
We're overpaid and we're arrogant.
It's Whose Line Is It Anyway? It's live on stage right there at the City Winery
it's
tonight.
It's actually Who's Live Anyway? Every time you say that, we have to pay a residual.
Oh,
anyway.
Did they change one letter?
Yeah, we
who's
did.
Live,
who's
yeah.
Live?
We're called
is it
Who's
anyway.
Live Anyway?
It says yeah. it on my promo
anyway.
Stuff line.
I know. It's cost us 38 cents so far.
You could have gone with Whose Line Is It Any Who? People love that.
I did one in Edinburgh a couple years ago called What Does the Title Matter Anyway? Because they wanted it to be as unwieldy and horrible as
That's
possible.
That's beautiful. Yeah. Good marketing strategy.
Yeah.
Whose Live Is It Anyway at the City Winery tonight and tomorrow night? You got Greg, you got Joel, you also have Ryan Stiles and Jeff B. Davis. A great show. Go to citywinery.com/Chicago. Your information's there. Thanks, guys. Appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us on, Chicago.
Right. Bring on the sun.
It's coming. We'll take a quick break, then some news, then the sun. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.